The excitement of working in global health and working with partners is that you're often traveling diverse distances and times. And so we're now going to hopefully be joined by Dr. Patricia Garcia, and we'll see if the technology works. Patty is had many very important positions in her distinguished career. She's been the director of the National Institute of Health for Peru. She's, I believe, been the associate dean for the School of Public Health at Cayetano University. She did her training both at Cayetano and the University of Washington. She's one of the world's experts on sexually transmitted diseases and is also, I believe, and Michael can correct me if I'm wrong, the principal investigator on the only Fogarty training grant based outside of the United States, right?
Not the only one, but one of the only framework grants.
So really an outstanding accomplishment and directly relates to her incredible talents as a researcher and an educator. So what we're going to try and do is Patty will be able to see us. We will not be able to see her. Patty, are you there? Is she there?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes. Yeah, we can hear you. So we'll try to be very quiet here. We're going to send you through a telephone and through a microphone to the audience. And then if you just tell me when to advance your slides, I will do that. So I'll turn it over to you, and we're delighted that you could join us.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for the invitation. I'm sorry I couldn't be with you. It seems that the swine flu somehow arrived to Peru. I mean, there are no official cases, but I think I'm one of the ones. I have been very sick, and I'm still recuperating. But I appreciate this invitation to try to share some of the views from here, from Peru, about international partnerships, our experience, and I hope this also opens some more doors, windows and doors, for more international partnerships and collaborations with the university and with Canada. So I ask to put a number on each of the slides, since I'm not seeing what you are seeing. I will try to say slide 2, slide 3, etc. Try to be sure that we are seeing the same thing, and I hope this will go well. Let's hope for technology working this time. So let's go for slide 2. So this is the outline of my talk. Actually, I would like to go over some definitions, some research models, try to speak very briefly about partnerships and research capacity building, talk about some principles of good research partnerships, show you a little bit about Peru, the university where I work, Cayetano Heredia, we call it UPCH, and the experience that we have with international partnerships, and give you some examples. What are the lessons that we have learned? This issue about north to south and south to south relations, and some final conclusions. Let's go to slide 3. First of all, there is a lot that we discuss about collaborations and partnerships. Actually, collaboration, if you go and look in the dictionary, is just the act of working jointly, and whatever that means, really. And it's a word that we use a lot in different situations and doesn't work well sometimes. Partnership, on the other hand, is a much more comprehensive thing, which has to do with a cooperative relationship between people and or between groups who had a compromise, really, because they are sharing responsibilities and they are sharing benefits also, and they want together to achieve some specific goals. And that's what we're looking for. We're looking for partnerships. The other thing which I think it's interesting is to talk about this definition of international research relationship models, which is this type of things that happen between and over countries, which are these styles of research interaction that we see between developed and developing country researchers. Sometimes they are called collaborations, but several times they have nothing about real collaborations or real partnerships. And it's one of the things that I would like to address in the next slide. Please go to slide 4. I don't know if during the meeting you have discussed this issue, but I think this is quite interesting, and for us as a developing country, is real world, okay? Real world. What happened is that what we have been seeing during the years, and we still see, and probably in some countries is even much more critical, is that in this type of relationship between researchers, we have some models that are what the experts call semi-colonial, which are quite common, and unfortunately. There is one that is called hostile research, right? It's when we, for some reason, we get an email, now we get it through email also, or a call, when somebody from a university or an institution outside the country just sends a request, and sometimes they contact somebody from the laboratory or a very junior person, etc., asking to send them some biological samples because they want to do a study. And actually, I have been recently, I recently left the position of the chief of the National Institute of Health, and I want to share you one thing that we that happened there. This happened some years ago, but now we're seeing that it was a big, big problem. The National Institute of Health in Peru had a collection from several years ago of samples of patients with tuberculosis, cultures, patients with tuberculosis, and basically from multi-drug-resistant tuberculosis that were never studied. And the idea was to try to study it in retrospective, okay, when what types of mutations happen and when this problem started in the country. So we went to look into the bank, and actually there was almost no bank. And looking what happened with all the samples, where were they? Apparently, at some point, at some moment, researchers from other countries sent a request because they wanted to do a study, and the offer was that when the study was done and the samples were analyzed, whoever was it at the institute was going to be part of the publication. So, in a very naive way, the people from the institute just let the samples, they sent the samples to this place, and they never saw the research, actually they never saw the researchers from the first moment. They never saw them again, they lost the contact, and the country lost lots of opportunities. So that happens. And it's really, really a bad thing. Parachute research is another thing that we see quite often. A researcher from a developed country travels to the developing country for a short period of time. They come, they see, they talk, and they take back biological samples. And actually, as the country or trying to develop capacities and trying to do things, we don't get any benefits from that type of relation. Of course, there are other models that are coming as new possibilities, like this so-called annex site research. This is a research site which is established in a developing country, looks like a laboratory from any developed country in a developing country, but which is basically managed and led by foreigners, by expatriate staff. Completely independent from national institutions that are, because of course, I mean, sometimes it's difficult to deal with people from the other country. And becomes very promising for national academics, but that means that we start losing very promising people from the universities and even from the government, because they start to work on these institutions, and actually they work so independently that really they don't give any type of benefit for the developing of capacities in the developing country. So these semi-colonial models are one thing that has, and still it's very common, that is not a good example of what research should be in a global community. On the other hand, partnership models, which are the ideal, at least for us in the South, let me tell you. We understand that it's a kind of like a challenging model, but it's a possible model. And eventually, it will and it has benefits from both of us, from the North and from the South, and also and especially for the global community, because at the end, we are all in the same world. Next slide, please. Slide 5. Here is just to summarize, I mean, these two things that we are seeing, the semi-colonial model and the partnership model. One of the big issues is that usually setting the research agenda, and this is a problem for all of the researchers in general, but in the semi-colonial model, usually the research agenda is set by the outsiders. We understand that several times the research agenda in the world is set by the ones who are funding the funding research. But in this semi-colonial model, we, as developing countries or people from the South, we are never asked, what do we think we can be doing? And that's something that it's quite different when we are talking about the partnership model, in which we can negotiate and we can see what can we do, which that could be also very, that could be beneficial for our countries. In the semi-colonial models, usually, if there are any links to national institutions, they are very peripheral. And I understand, I know the difficulties that I myself have to deal with my national institutions. But in a way, that's the only way to find sustainability and to be sure that whatever is done in research may have some impact in real life and in real public health. In the case of the partnership model, what we should try to do is try to have these links with national institutions. And national institutions is not only the government, but academic institutions, which I think are probably that missing link that we have to work more closely. I call it missing link because for the government, sometimes the academic institutions are never there. We do research, but we never talk with the government, and the government has promised and never talk with us. But those academic institutions are that missing link that should be part of any partnership with the North. In dissemination, in the semi-colonial models, heavily we try just, they try just to publish in international journals. And we understand that too, because that's a way of getting funding. But the truth is that if we want to make any change, we need to also try to publish in the national language and in national journals and try to disseminate whatever findings are in the country. Another thing which is important is the semi-colonial model is doesn't care really about sustainability or generalizability of your research findings. While in the partnership model, we try to work on that. And at the end, the effect of a semi-colonial model is really negative, while the partnership model, which we should try to look for, has a very positive effect, builds up academic infrastructure, and builds up the respect also for research in our country. So what I'm trying to say is that, of course, I mean, and we are going to talk at the end about challenges, the semi-colonial model is the type of relationship that we have been seeing more, but we have to move into this partnership model that will take probably more time, but eventually will be beneficial. Slide 6. Next slide, please. So, if we try to see how a good research partnership relates with research capacity building, I mean, they are very well integrated. And this is a modified graphic from an article that was published by Porter in 2004. Well, the point that he was trying to make and we are trying to make is that capacity building is not one step. It has to do with several steps in which we start developing tools, building skills, improving staff and infrastructure, and even improving structures, systems, and roles. But part of that has to do with investment in training institutions and also to have some more trained individuals that eventually become a critical mass, and we think that part of that is to have a good research partnership that allows the countries and the institutions to move from one place to the other. Let's go to slide 7. What are the principles of good research partnerships? Well, we can make a very big list, but I think probably these are the most important things. One is mutual trust and shared decision making, which is key in the relationship. The second thing in this good research partnership is to address issues like national ownership, which eventually have to do with how the countries can use the research findings and build these research findings into their policies and improvement of public health, which is eventually what we should try to do with research too. There should be an emphasis on getting research findings into policy and practice. Good research partnership should include training, mentoring, and exchange, because I think this should be a two-way street in which both countries in a research partnership will benefit and both have something to learn from each other. And another thing which is quite important is to try to work within the national research agenda. It's true that several of the developing countries do not have yet a developing research agenda, but probably part of these evolving developing capacities has to do with working on a research agenda for the country. Let's go to slide 8. So what about Peru, Cayetano, UPCH, and experience with international partnerships? Well, let me introduce you to Peru. Nowadays, this is Peru. We have a population of 29 million people. Our geography is very diverse. We have three very distinct regions, a coast, the Andes, and a jungle. And you can go from one to the other in a very short period of time by plane, or if you want, you can drive. So it's such a wonderful country. 70% of our country is urban, and one-third of the population is located just in Lima, which is the capital. Probably, if you have heard something about Peru, you have heard about the Inca culture and Machu Picchu, and that is not in Lima, that is in Cusco, which is in the south. And we have the highest lake in Puno, which is the Titicaca. Mainly we speak Spanish, but there are areas in which we have these other languages like Quechua and Aymara. And it seems that our food is becoming more popular. We have lots of ethnic influences in food. So you are invited to come to Peru and see all these things that I'm telling you about. Next one, please. Cayetano Heredia, UPCH, is a relatively new university. We were founded in 1961. But one interesting thing about our university is that it was funded basically by a group of professors from another university, which is the oldest university in America, which is San Marcos, which is also a medical university. So a group of professors were a little tired of having so much trouble in San Marcos and having the students on strike quite often. So they decided to create a university with a different view, very academic, but also from the very beginning with the idea of working in research. And I think that's what makes the difference with Cayetano, that the people who founded the university decided to start with the idea of working not only in academics, but also promoting research. Nowadays, we have about 2,000 students, 8 schools, and research is a priority. Next one, please. And Peru has become as a concrete example of a research hub in Latin America. We're the second country receiving NIH funding in Latin America. And if you compare the other countries and the populations, you can see that if we divide the number of people between the number or the funding, actually, I didn't put the number of funding, but actually we're receiving a very important amount of funding compared to the size of our country. And Cayetano is the largest research institution in the country and basically the main one receiving funding from NIH. Next one, please, slide 11. But it's not only that we're receiving funding, but we're working very carefully on investing, trying to create an enabling environment for research. In our structure, we have a vice director of research, which is just below the president of the university. We have a well-established IRB, and this was the first one in Latin America which was certified by institutions in the U.S. We have an office of grants and contracts. We have more grants to promote intramural research, which are funded by the university itself. We have recognition of research professors, and we are giving awards for research within the university, and we have a Latin American award for research. And nowadays, we are also starting with the small funds that we have, scholarships for postdoctoral reentry support. We're trying to work also against brain drain, at least from our position. This is a scholarship which is competitive, allows people to be funded one per year. And the National Council of Science and Technology in Peru is analyzing all the experience that we're having, and they are thinking about following the example and see if the country can start also giving scholarships for postdoctoral reentry support. Actually, I have to say that one thing about Cayetano is that we are a private university, but it's a kind of like a special type of university. So we don't receive any support from the government, but that's a problem. It's an advantage and a problem. So, and basically we are supported by the fees of the students plus some kindly support that we receive once in a while by foundations plus research, which makes our situation, I mean, we're sustained, we consider ourselves sustainable, but even with that shortage of funding, we're trying to promote this respect and enabling environment for research. Next one, please. Slide 12. This is just to show you, we have been trying to analyze the case of Cayetano Heredia through the time, how we have been growing in the number of partnerships, in the number of grants, in the type of grants that we have been receiving, and this just has to do with the grants and the funding that we have received from NIH. If you see on the left side, actually going to the names of the institutions, you can see that we started having some partners like the Navy Research Detachment from the U.S. 23 years ago, we started having cooperative agreements with them and working with them in research and training. With Johns Hopkins 21 years ago, with the University of Washington and Alabama, Birmingham. Probably those are our long-standing partnerships, and I want to talk a little bit about those because we're still working with them and we have been building capacity in relation with the work we have been doing with these institutions. Next one, please. Competitive research funding has been increasing at Cayetano Heredia. It is not easy, but because as you could imagine, this is funding from mostly international sources, because we're just starting to understand in my country that our country should also invest in research. So, and it has been very difficult as a developing country to compete with other countries for funding. Recently, we have been able to get the Global Framework Research Award as an institution without any other collaborator, really. But it has been very difficult. We think that we can do it, and we have been learning during these years how to do it. Next one, please. Let me mention some of our successful international partnerships from which we have learned some lessons, and those are the things that we would like to share with you. We have several other partnerships that are they are not that long-standing, but basically the relationships with Johns Hopkins, with Washington and Alabama had allowed us to create very strong research groups within the university. In the case of Johns Hopkins, I was talking about more than 20 years of collaboration, 25, with training and research grants that had allowed us to have several PhDs. We have 7 already graduated, more than 10 in training, and several others that are applying right now, plus several master's degrees. So right now we have a very strong group working on cysticercosis with Dr. Hector Garcia and Armando Gonzalez, which are nowadays leading researchers in this area in the world. With the University of Washington, and actually I trained there, and a group of us, and I have even students that still train there, and now we're creating what we call sandwich programs, which is something that we're trying to do, in which part of the training could be at Washington and part of the training could be here in Peru. We started 20 years ago with Dr. Tim Holmes. Nowadays we have two PhDs, but we have more than 20 MPH working and more than 60 other people training in different areas, including statistics, laboratory administration, etc. And we have created a very strong STI HIV research unit at Cayetano, and there is also a clinical trial unit in Peru led by Dr. Jorge Sanchez. With the University of Alabama, at the Tropical Medicine Institute with Dr. Eduardo Gotuso, they have built a very strong tropical course, which is an international course which receives people from all the world coming to get trained on tropical diseases. It's a gorgeous course. We have a master's program also, and we have other programs for students and for experts in the area of tropical medicine. So through these international partnerships, we have been able to create national and also global collaborations, and nowadays we're seeing national and global impact of the work that these groups are doing. Next one, please. Slide number 15. In the case of the cysticercosis group, for example, they are already working not only with John Hopkins, but there are collaborations and funding from different countries in Europe, Asia, and also now we're working south to south. So things that we're learning and we're implementing, we're working with countries in our side of the world too. We have a national impact. We have been able to improve policies and official diagnosis and treatment guidelines. And we have also global impact because there are new diagnostics, treatment, and vaccines and field control issues that are being used in the world. For example, there was one thing which has been very important is the recognition that seizures could be associated with cysticercosis. And that has had an impact on the management, for example, of the U.S. Hispanic populations and Hispanic populations in other parts of the world. But we now recognize that seizures can be associated with this type of problem, cysticercosis. And there has been diversification in sources of funding, which are allowing this group to continue working. Next one, please. Slide number 16. In the unit that I work and I coordinate, which is the STI HIV unit at the School of Public Health, we have been able to work with the University of Washington at the beginning, but now we have global collaboration. We're working with people at UK and China, and we have received funding from different sources. We are giving opportunities of training research for local people, for people from the world, and one of the things that we are really very proud about is that we have been able to have national impact, again, in policies, in official diagnosis and treatment guidelines. And our data, the data that we produce, is basically the data that is being used by the Ministry of Health and international agents, and even where we have been working has helped the country with the proposals to the Global Fund. And we are one of the few countries that has received several rounds funding for the Global Fund for HIV and has allowed the country to implement antiretroviral treatment and also interventions for prevention of STIs in the country. The other thing which becomes another opportunity that came from this same group and the work that we are doing is that we started implementing innovative interventions like doing general population surveys using PDAs or PALMs, these small mobile computers. We have been using also cell phones for reporting medical adverse events, even in groups of female sex workers. We have been introducing mobile teams of health workers using these cell phones to communicate directly into internet and having information into databases. So kind of like a telemedicine within these small groups of and working in STIs. And we have been using also internet as prevention measures. This has allowed us to create a new unit within the university that has to do with e-health and telemedicine, and we have recently applied, and we will see how it goes, for a grant at NIH to develop an ambient center for medical informatics for the ambient region, basically. So from one area, we have been evolving also into this area of communication information technologies. And we are sharing with countries of the region the experiences that we have with SDIs and control, and we'll keep working on that. These are not the only samples. I mean, in Cayetano, we are working also in mental health, and these are with collaborations with McGill University and other groups. There are groups that are working on violence and control of violence. There are groups that are starting to work on policy issues and management in health. There are groups that are working on other tropical diseases. And there are other areas that we would like also to work in partnership, like this group of diseases that we call the forgotten diseases, like Bartonellosis, which is a disease that we still have in the country and nobody is doing anything about that. Please go to slide 17. So what are the lessons learned? The same way that there are groups that have evolved into more and more funding and are working and growing bigger, what we have seen is that those are the groups that have worked, that there are some groups that have not evolved, and basically probably that is related with the fact that they were working isolated and they never want to develop partnerships because they had that experience before. So research groups which operate in isolation, those limit the scope of success of their work. And that's something that we're discussing now within the university also, because we're trying to see to develop partnerships, but good partnerships, in order to evolve the way some other groups within the university had evolved. Research is essential for development and becomes a bridge between countries. This issue of being able to train in other country and come back to my country has been very helpful. We have very good friends in other universities, and some people said that we have become diplomats in our own regions, and I think it is true. I mean, we have very good relations which go even beyond sometimes research, but that allowed us to have a good partnership. And this is giving opportunities for young researchers in our country, but also from abroad, to come and work and do really global health and public health. Collaborators are important, and we know that there are benefits in both ways. We think that the expertise from the North is quite important, and we really appreciate it. And we appreciate also when collaborators are understanding about our local needs and our local resources. Next one, please. Slide 18. Also, we have learned that good research partnerships require huge investments of time from all participants. I mean both sides. This issue, and I have heard this in some international meetings, like in developing countries, because we do not have good salaries. We have to do lots of things at the same time. We don't spend time, enough time. So that's one of the reasons why they cannot establish, this is the point of view of the North, they cannot establish good partnerships. And it's true, and it's true. So I really think that both sides really have to invest a good amount of time in order to have a good relationship and to have good products. And at the end, this will be really rewarding. But also, good research partnership requires to have training and mentoring in both ways, because that eventually will help to establish long-lasting, sustainable partnerships. Nowadays, we have students, well, actually, they are not the students anymore. they got the master's and PhDs, who are mentoring other students from other countries when they come here. So this creates a real framework, real global community in research. And eventually, this partnership changed the life perspective in both sides. Next one, please, slide 19. But of course, not everything is sweet. There are challenges. First of all, what I was mentioning, there are heavy demands on participants and investments from both sides, which means time and effort. And that is something that we have to talk and we have to really put into the table when we start making partnerships. It takes time. High-quality projects may take longer, and the startup phase can be really long. And I know that sometimes we have a specific schedule to do a project, but, I mean, at the beginning, things may be slow, but eventually they will move along, and I think both sides have to be very clear about that. Communication is quite important to avoid confusion. It is true, sometimes language is a problem. I mean, one say one thing and the other one understands the other one, even if they both kind of speak the same language. But when the languages are different, that's even a more difficult thing. But I think communications and trying to keep open channels. I mean, in our case and in the case of the Cystic Fibrosis group and other groups, I mean, we have conference calls, and now with Skype and Illuminate, et cetera, we keep communicating every month. And depending on how active we are with the project, even every week, plus the emails that have allowed us to have better communication, but I think that's quite important in a good partnership. The other thing, although it sounds like more like ethics than partnerships, informed decisions. I think when in the South, I mean, because that happens sometimes with relations with the North, it is like sometimes it is understood that we are not the ones who make the decisions, or the decisions are taken without informing what we could do. I think that this is a relation of mutual respect. So the decisions that are taken that have to do with collaborations, with research and partnerships, have to be informed in both sides. Equity and justice, that's another thing which is quite important. And that has to do with a horizontal relationship that is sometimes a little challenging, but eventually it works. Some people talks about twinning, which means one-to-one relationship in a very horizontal way, like twins. Well, I think there should be twins, or they could be triplets or four if there is a need. But the relationship had to be really horizontal. Next one, please, slide 20. So how to compare North to South and South to South relationships? I think we need to have a balance, okay? I think it's important for us countries in the South to work together. From start, we have a peer-to-peer relationship. It could be more cost-effective. We have advantages of language in most of the cases. But I think it's quite important to nurture and keep and promote good partnerships between the North and the South, because that can help us to develop capabilities. It may cost more time, more money, but there is the advantage of expertise. And the thing is that we, again, and I keep saying this, we are only one world, and we have to promote global frameworks. And that has to do with good partnerships, North to South, South to South, and everybody with everybody. So, as a conclusion, and this is, the title says the view from the South, but actually it's my view and probably the view of several of us. I discussed these issues with several of the researchers here. We have once a year in Cayetano, we have a retreat in which all the researchers come together and we share what we are doing and we share our frustrations and our experience. So we all had this kind of discussion last year, and we will have another one in June, coming June. And we think that international partnerships are quite important for capacity development. And we think also that this gives opportunities for both, for developed and for developing countries. That we all have to share the principles of good partnerships, and we have to really be clear that there are challenges, which are real, but they can be overcome, and there are lessons and there are experiences that we have that show that partnerships can happen, should happen, and are really good for both. UPCH has established good international partnerships, and one of the most important things is that beyond science, lifelong friendship and mutual benefits are something that lasts and lasts for years and years, and that's the experience that we have with partnerships. Let's go to the next slide, please. I know that this whole meeting has to do with this global framework that NIH has been promoting. We do have our global health program. I invite you to enter to our webpage. We have been creating this global community even within our university, because I will say that we used to work very separately between the schools, the School of Dentistry, Veterinary Nursing School, the School of Science and the School of Medicine and the School of Public Health. We're not talking together, but now we're working together towards this idea of global health. We are offering courses that are for all the schools together, for the master's, for the postgraduate students. Now we are offering a master's degree, but we also have a course for students, which is open also for international students. It's usually given in July for a week. Because this year will be from between 20 and 25 of July. We already have international students coming, and they, we pair them with Peruvian students. They then have a trip to specific parts of the country. We're a small country in general, so we can travel and see other realities. And so this course for the students, which is in the third year, actually, has been also very helpful, because I think we have to create the partnerships very early, even from the time that they are students. The next slide, please. So thank you very much. And I don't know if we will have the opportunity of having questions, but I hope that at some point I can visit and you can visit Peru, and we can establish other areas of partnership, because it is challenging, but we think it's quite beneficial for both of us. Thank you.
Patty, can you hear me? I'm not sure we're going to be able to work out the questions, but if you can hear me, thank you very much for an outstanding presentation. And look forward to seeing you probably in about 3 or 4 weeks down in Lima. And I hope you and your daughter are feeling better. Take care.
Okay. Well, thank you so much.
All right. So we'll move on.